As we emerged from the tree line, I spotted a set of ancient stone steps cut into the rock, zigzagging downward beneath the overhang of the cascading falls. The path was well-worn from centuries of use, the steps smoothed and rounded by countless feet treading upon them. It was clear this route provided the only viable passage down the vertiginous precipice and to whatever lay hidden behind the curtain of the pounding white water. I glanced back at my companions. Ephraim gazed up at the magnificent cataract with an expression of wonderment, the fine mist speckling his dark skin with glistening droplets. Nikolai's eyes narrowed as he assessed the path, mentally calculating the risks and difficulties of the treacherous descent.
Look alive, people! Watch your step and take it slow. It's gonna be slick as snot on those stairs.
You always paint quite the word picture.
Color euphemisms aside, I was dead serious about caution being the order of the day. One misstep on those age-smoothed rocks, lubricated by the unending spray, and it would be an express ticket to the bottom. And I had no desire to test out my enhanced resilience or regenerative abilities against a 300-foot drop onto jagged stone.
Jesse's right. This is no time for sightseeing. Let's get moving before any more nasty surprises catch up to us.
I nodded in grim agreement, my thoughts flashing to Diego, the backstabbing bastard who had sold us out to Black back in Santa Elena. Who knew how much of a head start his duplicity had cost us? The sooner we reached the sanctuary of the hidden cave system, the better. With that sobering reminder, I took point, carefully picking my way down the first set of steps. The stone was every bit as treacherous as I'd feared, worn to a reflective smoothness and slick with accumulated moisture. I had to catch myself against the cliff wall more than once as my boots threatened to skid out from under me. Sweat trickled down my spine beneath my tack gear, and it had little to do with the sticky jungle heat. Something about this place felt off, a nebulous sense of unease that prickled at the edges of my perception. Maybe it was that incessant roar of the water, so loud it drowned out all other ambient noise. Or perhaps it was the knowledge that we were descending into Chibalba, the Mayan underworld, a place steeped in blood-soaked history and supernatural peril. Whatever the source, my instincts were screaming at me that danger lurked ahead, as palpable as the cloying humidity. After what felt like an eternity of cautious down-climbing, we reached a small landing about a third of the way to the bottom. The path curved beneath an overhang, disappearing behind the thrumming curtain of the waterfall. I had to shout to make myself heard over the ceaseless rumbling of the cataract.
Looks like the way continues under the falls. Stay alert and watch your...
My warning was cut off as a deep, bone-rattling vibration shuddered through the stone beneath our feet. I staggered, nearly pitching forward off the narrow ledge before slamming my back against the slick rock wall. All around me, loose gravel rained down the cliff face, clattering on the steps and pinging off our gear.
Earthquake! Brace yourselves!
The world bucked and heaved in a dizzying, disorienting jumble. I gritted my teeth until my jaw ached, clinging to the cliff for dear life as the shuddering intensified. The deafening growl of the tremors merged with the roar of the waterfall into a cacophonous fury that pounded at my skull. A small, cold part of my brain, insulated from the primal terror of being shaken off the rock face, wondered if this was just seismic misfortune or some fresh hell conjured by our enemies to thwart our desperate gambit. I snapped my head toward the awful sound just in time to catch a glimpse of a flailing figure plummeting past me in a blur of fatigues and gear. My heart turned to ice in my chest. One of ours. Gone, just like that. Dashed to pieces on the jagged stone so far below. I squeezed my eyes shut, trying to blank out the horrific image seared into my mind's eye, and held on with every shred of my enhanced strength as the world continued to convulse around me. An endless, nightmarish eternity later, the shuddering subsided with one final groan of tormented stone. Hardly daring to breathe, I cracked my eyes open. Ephraim was still plastered to the cliff nearby, ashen and wide-eyed. But there was no sign of Nikolai's massive frame. Dread knotted in my gut. Slowly, dreading what I might see, I leaned out and peered downward. My heart stuttered, then surged with wild hope. There! Maybe 50 feet below us, the Russian clung to a wizened tree jutting from the rock face, his legs dangling into empty space. One of his arms hung oddly, the shoulder joint clearly dislocated. He must have caught the tree limb as he fell past, arresting his deadly plummet. But there was no way he'd be able to climb back up in his current state, and I could see his grip slipping even as I watched.
Nikolai! Hang on! We're coming for you!
Icy blue eyes looked up at me, agony and grim determination warring in their depths.
I could see his lips move in response, but couldn't hear him above the rushing waters. I whirled to bark orders at the others, but the words died in my throat. Ephraim was gone. For a paralyzed heartbeat, I thought the worst. But then a flicker of movement caught my eye. I boggled, scarcely able to believe what I was seeing. The half-vampire hybrid was scuttling down the sheer stone face as easily as a lizard. Or a spider. He moved with preternatural agility and uncanny grace, palms and feet adhering to the slick rock as if glued.
You crazy son of a bitch.
Ephraim paused about 30 feet above Nikolai's precarious position. With economical movements, he unslung a coil of lightweight climbing rope from his gear and expertly anchored it, hammering a piton into a tiny crack in the stone. Then he continued his unnerving headfirst descent, unspooling the rope behind him. In what seemed like seconds, Ephraim reached our stranded comrade. Deftly, he wrapped the rope around Nikolai's waist and clipped it with a carabiner. Sweat streamed down the Russian's ashen face as he clung to the tree with his one good arm, stoically fighting the agony of his dislocated shoulder and the terror of his predicament. Releasing his uncanny grip on the cliff face, the half-vampire hybrid rappelled downward, the line playing out smoothly behind him. Though laden with Nikolai's not inconsiderate bulk, Ephraim's superhuman strength made the task look effortless. Shaking myself from my dazed stupor, I got moving, carefully yet quickly descending the remaining steps. By the time my feet hit the lagoon shore, kicking up puffs of pearlescent sand, Ephraim had Nikolai safely unclipped and settled. The Russian's face was parchment white and slick with sweat, but his jaw was set in a stoic line. He cradled his misshapen shoulder with his good hand.
Jess, I need you to put it back in.
Will do, buddy, but brace yourself. This is gonna suck a little. Positioning myself behind him, I grasped his wrist and carefully rotated the arm outward, pulling firmly. There was a sickening snap as the ball of the humerus popped back into the shoulder socket.
Thanks. Damn. It never gets any more fun.
Rest up for a few, then we've got to get moving. That earthquake felt a little too damn convenient for my liking. I'd bet good money Black or her demonic bitch of a sibling had a hand in it.
Nothing that can use geologic instability as a weapon is anything I want to tangle with, souped up genetics or not. Sooner we find that cave, the better.
And the closer we get to the entrance of Chabalba, the more perilous the path becomes. Primal powers are stirring, forces that have slumbered since the age of myth, and they know we're coming. The Mayans had believed Chabalba to be a place of fear and dread, of trials and torment endured by souls passing into the afterlife. And now, we were about to cross that terrible threshold, not as shades, but as living interlopers, trespassers in a realm where no mortal belonged. But the alternative, to leave the final shard of the Gladius Diaboli in its perilous resting place, was unthinkable. The sword was the key to everything, to restoring the delicate balance between the mundane and the arcane, to safeguarding our world against the depredations of those who would use it for their own nefarious means, to finally bringing the fight back to the shadowy forces that had made us into weapons for their own ends. Thankfully, we only had a short distance to go before we reached our destination. I took a deep breath and surveyed the cavern entrance before us. The thundering waterfall cascaded over the cliff's edge, crashing into the lagoon below with a deafening roar.
All right, everyone, listen up. It's time to prepare for entering the cave system. Ephraim, help Zhao and Chandak get those self-inflating boats out of the backpacks and get them ready at the water's edge. We'll need them to navigate the partially submerged caves.
As they nodded and set to work, I reached into my own pack and pulled out the rock climbing helmets, each equipped with an individual headlamp.
Nikolai, grab a helmet and help me make sure these headlamps are secure. We don't want any accidents down there.
I tossed a helmet to him before strapping my own onto my head, the weight of it familiar and reassuring. Ephraim caught his helmet easily, a grin spreading across his face as he adjusted the straps. Nikolai, his arm still cradled close to his body, managed to catch his helmet with his good hand, a determined look in his eyes. As I watched them, a flicker of worry passed through me. We've been through so much together, faced countless dangers, but the challenges ahead were still unknown. I pushed the thought aside, focusing on the task at hand.
Ephraim, how are those boats coming along?
Almost ready, Jess. Just need to get them in the water.
I nodded, reaching for my satellite phone.
Good. I'm gonna try to reach Ghost before we head in. Update him on our progress.
I dialed the familiar number, pressing the phone to my ear as I waited for the connection. But after several long moments, all I heard was static. I frowned,
pulling the phone away and staring at the screen. No signal.
Damn it, the water must be interfering with the signal. We'll have to try again once we're out on the other side.
Don't worry, Jess. Ghost knows we can handle ourselves. We'll update him as soon as we can.
All right, everyone, listen up. We don't know what's waiting for us in there, but we do know that we're in this together. Watch each other's backs and stay alert.
The team moved into action. Zhao and Shadak pushed the now inflated boats into the deeper water, the rubber scraping against the rocky shore. The boats bobbed unsteadily, water lapping at their sides as Ephraim and Nikolai carefully climbed aboard. The smell of wet rubber mingled with the earthy scent of the jungle, creating an odd olfactory cocktail. I stepped into the boat beside Ephraim. The craft rocked beneath my feet, and I steadied myself, grasping an oar in my hands. The smooth wood felt solid and reassuring against my palms. As one, we pushed off from the shore, our oars dipping into the water with a synchronized splash. The current swiftly caught us, pulling us towards the yawning mouth of the cavern. The transition was abrupt. One moment we were in the warm, sun-dappled clearing, and the next, shadow engulfed us. The temperature plummeted, raising goosebumps on my arms as we crossed the threshold. The sunlight faded behind us, becoming a distant, shrinking portal of warmth and safety. I clicked on my headlamp, the beam cutting through the gloom ahead like a knife. Around me, five other beams of light sprang to life, dancing across the cavern walls and creating an ever-shifting landscape of light and shadow. The cavern walls rose up on either side of us, looming giants of stone that seemed to press in on us from all sides. They were slick with moisture, glistening in the lamplight like the scales of some enormous subterranean creature. Rivulets of water trickled down the rock face, each droplet catching the light of our lamps and sparkling like tiny diamonds before rejoining the dark river below. The air grew cool and damp, clinging to our skin and clothes. Each breath felt heavy, laden with the musty scent of wet stone and ancient earth. The sound of the waterfall faded to a distant rumble, replaced by the gentle lapping of water against our boats, and the occasional drip echoing from unseen recesses. I used my oar liberally, the wood creaking softly with each stroke as I guided the boat around jutting rocks and through narrow passages. The water beneath us was ink black, swallowing our lamplight and hiding its depths. Now and then, something would break the surface, a fish perhaps, or some other denizen of this underground world, sending ripples across the glassy surface and startling us with a sudden splash. As we ventured deeper, the cavern seemed to come alive around us. Our headlamps illuminated strange rock formations. Stalactites hung from the ceiling like the teeth of a giant beast, while stalagmites reached up from below, creating a natural obstacle course through which we had to navigate. Sounds of our passage echoed off the walls. The splash of oars, the scrape of rubber against stone, our own hushed breathing. Each noise seemed amplified in the enclosed space, a reminder of how far we were from the outside world. In the distance, barely visible at the edge of our lamplight, I caught glimpses of movement. Bats, disturbed by our intrusion, flitted from one shadowy perch to another. Their high-pitched squeaks added an eerie overtone to the ambient sounds of the cave. As we pressed on, the cavern continued to unfold before us, each turn revealing new wonders and potential dangers. The weight of the earth above us was palpable, a constant reminder of our isolation and the precariousness of our position. Yet, despite the challenges ahead, a thrill of excitement ran through me.
You know, if I wasn't so focused on not crashing into a wall, I might be able to appreciate the beauty of this place.
Only you could find beauty in a dark, damp cave, Ephraim.
What can I say? I'm a glass half full kind of guy.
If that glass is half full of vodka, then I'm with you, my friend.
What's in the other half of the glass, Nikolai?
Vodka, of course.
Hey, you're consistent. I'll give you that, Red October.
Oh, you wish for Red October right now?
I sure do.
Their banter was familiar and comforting in a way. But as we ventured deeper into the caverns, the air seemed to grow heavier. A sense of unease settled over me. I couldn't shake the feeling that we were being watched, that something was lurking just out of sight in the shadows around the next bend. I tightened my grip on the oar, my senses on high alert. Beside me, I felt Ephraim tense, his jovial demeanor slipping away as he too sensed the change in atmosphere. Stay sharp, team. Something doesn't feel right. As we rounded a bend on the underground river, a vast open cavern stretched out before us. The beam of my headlamp illuminated a wide, rocky beach to our right. Ahead, an immense rock face had been intricately carved into the screaming visage of a Mayan warrior, complete with an ornate feathered headdress. The river flowed directly into the gaping maw of the carving and plunged downward out of sight. The thunderous roar of the waterfall echoed through the cavern, nearly deafening in its intensity.
Paddle hard! We need to get to that beach now!
We dug our oars into the dark water, straining against the current to propel the boats toward the rocky shore and safety. But as we drew closer, the flow of the river suddenly surged with frightening strength. The inflatable craft spun and bucked beneath us as the water dragged us inexorably toward the edge of the falls.
Keep rowing! We're almost there!
Slowly, painfully, we inched the boats closer to the gravelly strand until at last the rubber keels bit into the shallows and held fast. We stumbled ashore on unsteady legs, hauling the light crafts up onto the beach. I turned to stare at the warrior's stony face, an uneasy realization building in the back of my mind. The shattered pieces of the Gladius Diaboli in my pack seemed to hum with anticipation, resonating to the rumbling base of the cataract. The final fragment lay somewhere beyond that churning veil of water, I was certain of it, and I knew with equal surety that I was meant to retrieve it alone. I have to go on by myself from here. The last piece is down there through the falls. I can feel it calling to me.
Jess, are you sure about this? We don't know what's waiting on the other side. It's too dangerous to go alone.
He's right. We should stick together. Safety in numbers, yes?
Not this time. Call it instinct or the fragments guiding me, but I know I'm supposed to do this part solo. I need you two to head back to the cave entrance and wait for me there. They exchanged an uneasy glance, clearly unhappy with the idea of splitting up. But they also knew me well enough by now to recognize when I couldn't be swayed.
Fine. But you better come back in one piece, you hear? Don't make us come in there and pick you up with a dustpan.
Wouldn't dream of it. Now get going, both of you. I turned my attention to getting them back to the cavern's mouth. Closing my eyes, I reached out with my power, feeling for the currents in the underground river. With a flexing of mystical will, I seized hold of the water's flow and bent it to my desire, reversing the current so that it now surged back the way we had come. There, that should give you a boost. Just keep the boats pointed in the right direction and let the river do the rest. Now get out of here. Ephraim and Nikolai piled into their respective crafts, pushing off from the beach with a final parting wave. I watched until they disappeared back around the bend, carried along by my sorceress assistants. Then, I turned to the one remaining boat, my way forward. With a deep breath to steel my nerves, I shoved the remaining inflatable into the shallows and clambered aboard, settling myself as best I could and releasing my hold on the river. No sooner had I dipped my oar into the water than the current, now flowing back in the direction nature intended, snatched a hold of the boat with greedy fingers, spinning it about and pulling me toward the roaring deluge spilling over the effigy's lower lip. Inches from the edge, I closed my eyes and reached inward for my magic once more. I imagined a bubble of air springing into being around me and the boat, a protective sphere to shield me from the crushing force of the waterfall. I felt the energy surge through my body and then expand outward. In the next instant, I was falling, plummeting into the maelstrom with nothing but a fragile shell of sorcery between me and a watery grave. The bubble hit the surface of the churning pool at the base of the falls, and for a terrifying moment, I thought it would rupture, spilling me out into the flood. But it held, bobbing back to the surface like a cork and carrying me and my boat with it. I opened my eyes to find myself floating serenely in the heart of a raging tempest, cool mist from the cataract muting the light of my headlamp. With a thought, I dismissed the sphere, suddenly eager to feel the spray on my skin, to fill my lungs with the damp petrichor scent of stone and water. The river continued its journey onward, but I turned my craft toward the nearby shore. Paddling hard for the rocky beach, I could just make out through the gloom. My boots crunched on water-smoothed gravel as I dragged the boat ashore. Ahead, the beam of my light picked out the yawning mouth of a smaller cavern, an inky tunnel delving deeper into the living rock. But it was what ringed the entrance that made me catch my breath in wonder and no small amount of trepidation. 9 ledges had been meticulously hewn into the rough stone walls, their surfaces smooth and unnaturally flat against the otherwise craggy rock face. Each ledge was just wide enough to cradle its macabre occupant, the desiccated form of a Mayan mummy. I felt a chill run down my spine, entirely unrelated to the cave's cool air. These weren't just bodies, they were sentinels frozen in time, guarding this passageway for centuries. Their presence filled the air with an almost palpable sense of ancient power and forbidden knowledge. Tightly wrapped in decaying strips of fabric, the withered bodies stood in stark relief against the dark stone. The wrappings, once white perhaps, had yellowed with age, taking on the color of old parchment. In places, the fabric had worn away, revealing glimpses of leathery, darkened skin stretched taut over bone. As I raised my lamp higher, I couldn't suppress a shudder. The mummies' hollow eye sockets stared down from their lofty perches, seeming to follow our every move. Those empty gazes held an unsettling intensity, as if even in death, these ancient people were aware of our intrusion into their sacred space. I forced myself to look away from their haunting gaze, focusing instead on the passageway ahead. The final piece of the Gladius Diaboli lay somewhere beyond that doorway, watched over by the silent ranks of the dead. If what Professor Alvarez had told us was correct, I would soon be faced with 6 trials before reaching my destination, each embodied in a house of danger that I would have to navigate before the 12 demonic rulers of the underworld allowed me to pass to the next. The House of Darkness, the House of Cold, the House of the Jaguars, the House of Bats, the House of Razors, and the House of Heat. I wasn't looking forward to any of them, but that hardly mattered. Squaring my shoulders, I strode toward the dark portal. Shadows swallowed me up as I passed between the grim mummies, their empty gazes boring into my back. Cool air sighed against my skin, brushing stray strands of hair from my cheeks and carrying it with a whisper of something beyond my understanding. The tunnel sloped downward at a gentle gradient, leading me in a spiral ever deeper into the earth. The walls pressed close on either side, rough stones snagging at my clothes whenever I strayed too near to either side. Only the thin beam of my headlamp pierced the Stygian black ahead, and even that seemed muted somehow, as if the darkness were a tangible thing that resented the intrusion. I might have been descending for only minutes or for hours unending, when at last, the tunnel widened out abruptly into another open space. Shadows clung thickly here too, but they had a waiting quality, a stillness like the pause between one breath and the next. I took several cautious steps into the new chamber, my footfalls echoing off the unseen walls. Without warning, my headlamp sputtered and died, plunging me into a darkness so complete it felt tangible, like a physical presence pressing against my skin. I froze, my breath catching in my throat as I blinked rapidly, trying to will my eyes to adjust. But there was nothing to adjust to. The inky blackness surrounded me, thick and impenetrable, swallowing even the dim red glow of my headlamp's fading embers. I reached up and gave the headlamp a few whacks with my palm, hoping it was just a loose wire or bad connection. No go. Instinctively, I looked back over my shoulder, expecting to see the faint outline of the cavern opening I had just passed through. But there was only more darkness, stretching out endlessly behind me. A sense of disorientation washed over me. I lifted a hand in front of my face, waving it mere inches from my nose, but I couldn't see a thing. It was as if the darkness had weight, like it was actively pushing back against the motion. I reached inside, to the well of power that was always simmering just beneath my skin, intending to conjure a ball of light to banish the oppressive shadows. But as I extended tendrils of magic outward, I felt them recoil, like they had hit an invisible barrier. I pushed harder, gritting my teeth as I strained against the unseen force, but it was like trying to move through molasses. Something was actively restricting my power, dampening it until it was little more than a weak flicker. My anxiety spiked, which made it a lot harder to use any sort of rational thought. I tried to breathe slowly and evenly in an effort to calm my pounding heart. Panic wasn't going to get me out of this predicament. Logic dictated that I should be able to find the exit again simply by retracing my steps. I pivoted slowly, keeping one hand extended out in front of me as I inched backward, counting each step. But with each careful footfall, a sinking feeling grew in the pit of my stomach. I had taken far more steps than I remembered taking on my way in, but my questing fingers still hadn't brushed against the rough stone of the cavern wall. It was as if the darkness was playing tricks on me, distorting distance and direction until I was hopelessly turned around. I stopped again, drawing in a shaky breath as I fought down the panic, trying to claw its way up my throat. Getting worked up wouldn't help the situation. I needed to stay calm and think rationally. I started forward once more, keeping my steps slow and measured as I fought against the rising tide of fear. I had only gone a handful of paces when my foot hit open air, pitching me forward with a strangled yelp. I caught myself at the last second, teetering on the edge of a yawning pit that had opened up directly in front of me. Shaking, I lowered myself to my hands and knees, not trusting my trembling legs to hold me. I reached out with tentative fingers, feeling along the crumbling edge of the pit until I found the lip. It was jagged and uneven, the stone still warm from whatever mechanism had triggered the trap. As I leaned out over the opening, holding my hands below the level of the floor, I felt a trickle of power stir to life in my palms. A soft glow began to emanate from my skin, weak at first, but steadily growing brighter as I concentrated on it. The light spilled over the edge of the pit, illuminating a horrific scene below. The bottom of the pit was a mass of wickedly sharp stakes, their points gleaming in the pale light. Jutting up between them were the broken remains of skeletons, some old and bleached white, while others still had scraps of decaying flesh clinging to the bones. Empty eye sockets seemed to stare accusingly up at me, and I had to swallow back a wave of nausea. I sat back on my heels, lifting my hands away from the edge, and immediately the light sputtered out, plunging me back into darkness. But in that brief moment of illumination, I had caught glimpse of the chamber stretching out ahead of me. The floor was pockmarked with similar pits, a deadly obstacle course waiting to ensnare the unwary. Gritting my teeth, I lowered myself fully to the ground, pressing my belly against the cool stone as I began to inch forward. I kept my hands extended out in front of me, my fingers skimming the floor as I felt for any changes in texture that might indicate another trap. It was slow going. Each foot gained a hard-won victory as I painstakingly mapped out a safe path. Time lost all meaning in the oppressive darkness. It could have been minutes or hours that I crawled along, my muscles burning with the strain and my nerves stretched taut as a bowstring. Every small sound made me flinch. Every brush of air against my skin set my heart racing. But I forced myself to keep moving, to keep pushing forward, even as hopelessness tried to sink its claws into me. Just when I thought I couldn't go on any longer, when exhaustion and despair were threatening to overwhelm me, my seeking fingers brushed against a vertical surface. I froze, hardly daring to breathe, as I carefully explored the plane of stone in front of me. It was smooth and cool to the touch, a sharp contrast to the rough floor I had been traversing. Hardly daring to hope, I used the wall to lever myself to my feet, keeping one hand pressed against it as I sidled forward, my other held out in front of me. A few steps more, and I felt a change in the air, a slight movement that ruffled my hair and cooled the sweat on my brow. The exit. It had to be. I stumbled forward, nearly weeping with relief as I felt the darkness reluctantly relinquish its hold on me. With each step, the shadows seemed to peel away, like a physical weight being lifted from my shoulders. By the time I crossed the threshold into the adjoining chamber, the darkness had vanished entirely, taking with it the strange pressure that had been dampening my power. Just like that, my headlamp sprang to life again. I paused just inside the entrance, blinking owlishly as my eyes adjusted to the sudden influx of light. I could see rough-hewn walls stretching up on either side of me, the ceiling lost in shadow high above. The floor was smooth and worn, a marked contrast to the treacherous pit-filled chamber I had just left behind. Gingerly, I flexed my hands, feeling the tingle of magic once again flowing freely through my veins. Whatever force had been restricting it in the other room held no sway here. I allowed myself a small sigh of relief, my shoulders slumping as the tension I had been carrying bled out of me. I carefully entered the second chamber, known as the House of Cold, with cautious steps. The archaeologist Alvarez had warned us about the dangers that lay ahead, but I still felt unprepared for whatever challenges this ancient Mayan temple had in store. The path forward appeared clear at first glance, stretching out before me like an endless runway. The air felt no different than in the narrow tunnel I had just left behind. But I wasn't fooled by the seemingly benign atmosphere. I knew danger lurked there, waiting to reveal itself at the most inopportune moment. I crept forward, my boots scuffing softly against the stone floor. The light from my headlamp bounced off the rough-hewn walls, casting eerie shadows that danced at the edges of my vision. A shiver ran down my spine that had nothing to do with the temperature. Not yet, anyway. I made it about halfway across the vast chamber when it happened. A frigid gust of wind suddenly whipped up out of nowhere, enveloping me in its icy embrace. The cold penetrated straight through my jacket and thermal layers, chilling me to the bone in an instant. Then the snow began to fall. Fat, heavy flakes swirled around me, quickly coating the ground and obscuring my vision. Within moments, I found myself in the middle of a blinding whiteout. The temperature plummeted, and my breath puffed out in visible clouds with each desperate exhale. The logical part of my brain struggled to make sense of the impossible weather, but I pushed the useless questions aside. Right now, my only concern was getting out of this frozen hellscape. I pushed onward, trying to maintain a straight trajectory toward where I hoped the exit lay, but it was no use. The wind buffeted me from all sides, and the relentless snow made it impossible to see more than a foot in front of my face. My sense of direction spun like a broken compass. However, I knew I had to keep moving. I somehow knew that I would freeze to death if I stopped. I forced my legs to keep pumping, even as they grew numb and leaden. Time lost all meaning as I staggered through the storm. Minutes stretched into hours, or maybe it was the other way around. The howling wind drowned out all other sound. At some point, without even realizing it, I fell to my knees. The icy snow bit into my palms as I caught myself. I blinked hard, disoriented, my lashes crusted with ice. When had I ended up on all fours? I couldn't remember. Exhaustion pressed down on me like a physical weight. My body felt like a block of ice, heavy and unyielding. I tried to ignore the voice deep from within me, arguing that I should rest for a minute and catch my breath. Then I'd get back up and keep going. I sank down into the snow, pillowing my head on my arm. The swirling flakes seemed to slow and still as my eyelids fluttered closed. A strange lassitude stole over me, and I felt myself drifting, floating. A searing heat against my side jolted me awake. Ah! I cried out, more from shock than pain, and scrabbled at my satchel. My fingers closed around the gladius hilt, and I yanked it free. The metal was blazing hot to the touch, pulsing with an inner light that pierced the whiteout like a beacon. Understanding dawned. The gladius was trying to help me, to guide me out of this frozen death trap. Shaking off the lingering lethargy, I struggled to my feet and held the broken, burning blade aloft. I fixed my eyes on the shimmering path it carved through the blizzard. Step by halting step, I followed the gladius's light. The fractured blade seemed to blaze brighter with each passing moment, until it shone like a miniature sun in the manufactured night. I had no idea how long I stumbled along in its blazing wake. Time had ceased to have any meaning. After an eternity, or maybe only a few minutes, I staggered out of the raging storm and into blessed stillness. The wind died as abruptly as if someone had flipped a switch. The snow stopped, and the bone-numbing cold vanished between one breath and the next. I found myself standing at the entrance to the next tunnel, the gladius hilt still clutched in my shaking fist. I had made it. The House of Cold had failed to claim me, thanks to the gladius's intervention. I knew with sudden, unshakable certainty that without the sword fragment's aid, I would have frozen to death in that chamber, another victim of Chibalba's deadly puzzles. That was too damn close. I leaned against the tunnel wall and just focused on breathing for a minute. In and out. In and out. When the trembling in my limbs finally eased, I straightened up and took stock. Other than being chilled to the bone, I seemed to be in one piece. No frostbite, as far as I could tell. I flexed my fingers and toes experimentally, relieved when they all responded. I glanced down at the gladius hilt. The metal had cooled, the otherworldly light fading back to a dull gleam. But I could still feel the raw power thrumming within it, ready to surge forth at a moment's notice. Thanks for the save. I only felt a little foolish for talking to an inanimate object, but after what had just happened, thanking the gladius felt appropriate somehow, like acknowledging a comrade in arms. I returned the hilt to my satchel. Then, squaring my shoulders, I forged ahead into the next tunnel, ready to face whatever fresh horrors Chibalba had in store. I emerged from the House of Cold, my breath forming misty clouds in the frigid air. My body still trembled from the near-death experience, but the warmth of the gladius pieces in my satchel reassured me. As I stepped through an ornate stone archway, I found myself in a vast, hollow cavern that stretched far beyond what my eyes could comprehend. My eyes widened as I tried to take in the sheer scale of the space before me. The darkness seemed to stretch endlessly in all directions, swallowing any sense of up or down. My headlamp's beam was swallowed by the void, barely illuminating a few feet in front of me. As my eyes adjusted to the gloom, I noticed a thin bridge of rock spanning the chasm. It was barely wider than my foot, stretching precariously across the void like a tightrope walker's worst nightmare. I swallowed hard, realizing this treacherous path was my only way forward. Great. because crossing a razor-thin bridge over an endless abyss is exactly how I wanted to spend my evening. At least buy me dinner first. The bridge itself was stone and was more incredibly narrow path than bridge. I took a deep breath, steeling myself for the challenge ahead. The familiar weight of the satchel against my hip reminded me of why I was here, of the mission that had brought me to this godforsaken place. I couldn't turn back now, not when we were so close to completing the Gladius Diaboli. With careful, measured steps, I began my journey across the bridge. My dancer's training kicked in as I maintained perfect posture, arms slightly outstretched for balance. Each footfall was deliberate and precise, the rough stone scraping against the soles of my boots. I kept my gaze fixed on the far side, refusing to look down into the abyss below. One foot in front of the other, just like walking the catwalk, only with certain death on either side instead of judgmental fashion critics. Time seemed to stretch, each step feeling like an eternity as I inched my way across the chasm. Halfway across, I paused to catch my breath. My legs trembled slightly from the constant tension, and I could feel a thin sheet of sweat forming on my brow despite the cool air. I allowed myself a moment to close my eyes, centering myself and finding that inner calm I'd relied on so many times before. My eyes snapped open, and I cocked my head, straining to identify the source. The noise grew steadily louder, seeming to come from everywhere at once. My heart rate quickened as I scanned the darkness, searching for the source of the disturbance. Without warning, two massive bats burst into view from below. Their wingspans easily matched my height, leathery membranes stretched taut as they soared past. A rush of displaced air buffeted me, nearly knocking me off balance. I windmilled my arms, heart pounding as I fought to stay upright on the narrow ledge. Shit! Just as I steadied myself, chaos erupted. Hundreds of bats poured out of the darkness, filling the air with a cacophony of screeches and the thunderous beating of wings. The swarm surrounded me, creating a living, writhing tornado of fur and leather. I crouched low, trying to present a smaller target as the air currents intensified. My mind raced as I figured out how to survive this onslaught. The bats continued to stream past in endless waves, their wings stirring up powerful gusts that threatened to pluck me from my precarious perch. My muscles strained as I fought to maintain my position, knuckles white as I gripped the rough stone beneath me. My hair whipped wildly around my face, obscuring my vision and adding to the disorienting maelstrom. You've got this. Don't let a bunch of oversized rats with wings get the better of you. My entire world narrowed to the feel of the stone beneath me and the endless beating of wings around me. I focused on my breathing, trying to stay calm and centered despite the chaos. A particularly strong gust caught me off guard. My right foot slipped off the edge of the bridge, and for a heart-stopping moment, I teetered on the brink. Time seemed to slow as I felt myself falling backward into nothingness. Panic flooded my system, adrenaline surging through my veins. In a desperate move, I twisted my body and lunged forward. My fingers scrabbled against the rough stone, searching for purchase. By sheer luck, I managed to grasp a small outcropping. Pain lanced through my arm as my full weight yanked on the joint, but I held on with grim determination. Not like this! Inch by agonizing inch, I pulled myself back onto the bridge. My muscles screamed with every exertion. I was finally able to pull myself back onto the stone. I remained there, trembling, as the last of the bats disappeared into the darkness. Long minutes passed as I focused on my breathing, willing my racing heart to slow. The cavern fell silent once more. Gradually, the adrenaline faded, leaving me feeling drained and shaky. I knew I couldn't stay here forever, but the thought of standing made my stomach churn with fear. I pushed myself onto my hands and knees. My limbs felt like lead as I carefully rose to my feet. I took a moment to center myself, then resumed my journey across the bridge. My steps were slower now, more cautious, but filled with a newfound resolve. As I neared the far side of the cavern, relief washed over me. With a final, careful step, I crossed the threshold onto the safety of the ledge. I paused to look back at the bridge, marveling at the ordeal I'd overcome. The thin span of stone seemed even more impossibly narrow from this vantage point, and I shuddered at the memory of my near fall. The path sloped subtly downward, the uneven floor making me pick my steps with care. My headlamp bounced off the close stone walls, more cramped than the spacious tunnel leading into the House of Cold. A ribbon of unease twisted through my gut as I thought about the chamber that lay ahead. The House of Razors. Even the name sent a chill down my spine that had nothing to do with my recent brush with hypothermia. I couldn't imagine what nightmarish traps awaited me there, but I had a feeling I was about to find out. As if in response to my dark musings, a faint skittering sound reached my ears, barely audible over the scuff of my boots and the hammering of my pulse. I froze, straining to listen. There it was again, a dry, insectile clicking that made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. And it was coming from behind me. I spun around, calling power to my fingertips, ready to blast whatever might be behind me. But the tunnel stretched away, empty and silent, disappearing into darkness beyond the reach of my headlamp. A flicker of movement caught my eye. I whipped back around just in time to see something skitter across the tunnel floor and vanish into a narrow fissure in the wall. Something with far too many legs. Fuck me. I swallowed hard. So I hadn't been imagining things. There was definitely something alive down here with me. Several somethings, if that skittering was anything to go by. Nope. Not today, Satan. I quickened my pace, keeping a wary eye on the walls and floor. The furtive skittering seemed to grow louder, echoing weirdly in the narrow confines of the tunnel. Or maybe that was just my imagination again, amplifying my fear into auditory hallucinations. Either way, I wasn't sticking around to find out. The air grew noticeably warmer and more humid as I hurried along, making my skin prickle with sweat under my layers. The tunnel took a sharp right turn, then widened abruptly into a high-ceilinged chamber. I skidded to a halt at the threshold, my boots scuffing against the smooth stone. I found myself standing at the edge of a large circular room, easily 50 feet across. The walls were covered in elaborate carvings, a riot of twisting serpents and leering skulls picked out in startling detail. But it was the floor that commanded my attention. A series of concentric stone rings marched out from the center of the chamber, each one bristling with rows of wickedly sharp obsidian blades. The rings alternated in height, some flush with the floor, others raised to knee level or higher. The black volcanic glass gleamed in the beam of my headlamp, edges honed to razor keenness. Well, fuck. I stared at the deadly labyrinth, my mouth suddenly bone dry. There was no way around it. The only path forward lay straight through that maze of blades. Welcome to the House of Razors. I eyed the distance between each ring of obsidian knives. The gaps were narrow, barely wide enough for a foot to fit. One wrong step, one moment of inattention, and those blades would slice through flesh and bone like butter. If former experience was any clue, I'd have to make it through the chamber without the use of my magic to boot, leaving me vulnerable to whatever the hell it was that was moving in my wake. I didn't come this far to pussy out now. There was too much riding on me succeeding. Moving with exaggerated care, I stepped out into the House of Razors. My boots rang on the stone as I navigated the first few rings, easing my feet into the narrow gaps. Despite the clammy sweat coating my skin, my movements were precise, controlled. I'd always been nimble, a side effect of my dancer's training, and that agility served me well now as I picked my way through the deadly maze. I went one step at a time, trying not to think about what happens if I fucked up. Sweat trickled into my eyes, stinging and blurring my vision. I blinked it away impatiently. I couldn't afford any distractions, not when one lapse in concentration could mean losing a limb, or worse. I risked a quick glance over my shoulder and immediately wished I hadn't. They swarmed out of the tunnel in a chittering tide, a mass of segmented bodies and scrabbling legs. Some nightmare hybrid of scorpion and centipede, each one easily the size of my forearm. Their carapaces shimmered in oily iridescence as they poured into the chamber, dozens, maybe hundreds strong. They flowed over and around the rings of obsidian blades like a chitinous river, all snapping mandibles and stabbing stingers. Panic threatened to overwhelm me. My pulse thundered in my ears, drowning out all rational thought. Oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck. I lurched forward, my boots slipping on the smooth stone. I windmilled my arms for balance. I caught myself at the last second, nearly impaling my thigh on a jutting blade. The stone scoring through my jeans, missing skin by a hair's breadth. The close call somehow provided me a moment of incredibly lucid clarity. The only way out was forward, through the rings. One wrong move in here would slice me to ribbons. I risked another glance behind me and immediately regretted it. The arachnid horde had halved the distance between us. They scuttled over the rings with obscene agility, their segmented bodies bending at impossible angles to wriggle between the blades. A wave of revulsion shuddered through me. I could all too easily imagine those spindly legs crawling across my skin, sinking venomous fangs into my flesh, draining me dry and skeletonizing my remains in minutes. I needed to move my ass, and fast. I whipped back around and surged forward, desperation lending me speed. I wasn't even bothering to step carefully anymore. I just flung myself across the rings, heedless of the blades that wickered past, scoring shallow cuts along my arms and legs.
Ah, fuck!
The skittering of the bugs grew louder, echoing off the chamber walls. I could feel the malevolent weight of all those eyes on my back, the feverish hunger in their alien gazes. I was almost to the far side of the chamber when my boot caught on a jutting rock. Time seemed to slow as I pitched forward, already bracing for the agony of obsidian blades piercing my flesh. And then, in a flash of pure instinct, I twisted my body in midair, tucking into a roll. I hit the ground hard, my shoulder taking the brunt of the impact, but I kept rolling, the momentum carrying me clear of the obsidian blades. I came up in a crouch on the far side of the final ring, my heart hammering against my ribs. Holy shit, I can't believe that actually worked. But there was no time to marvel at my own dumb luck. The skittering tide was almost upon me, a writhing mass of chitin and too many legs. I surged to my feet and sprinted for the tunnel mouth, desperation lending my battered body speed. I half expected to feel the bite of venomous mandibles sinking into my flesh at any moment, but I reached the tunnel unscathed. I whipped around, raising my hands, my fingers already working in an intricate design. Let's see how you fuckers like a little light show. I thrust my hands out toward the oncoming horde and let loose with a blast of arcane power. Searing white light flooded the chamber, bright enough to stab through my closed eyelids. The skittering turned to frenzied shrieking, a cacophony of pain and confusion. I risked a glance and immediately wished I hadn't. The blast of arcane power had done its job, stunning and disorienting the arachnid horde. But even dazed, they were still nightmare fuel personified, a heaving mass of twitching legs and glistening carapaces. I turned and ran like the hounds of hell were on my heels, which, considering what I'd just left behind, wasn't too far from the truth. My lungs burned and my muscles screamed in protest as I pelted through the winding tunnels. I had no idea where I was going, only that I needed to put as much distance as possible between myself and that skittering horror show. I didn't know how long I ran, time and distance blurring into a smear of labored breaths and pounding feet. But eventually, when the skittering had long since faded and my body felt ready to give out entirely, I stumbled to a halt in a small antechamber. For a long moment, all I could do was focus on the in and out rush of air in my lungs, willing my roller coaster pulse to slow. When the spots finally cleared from my vision and I no longer felt on the verge of passing out, I straightened up and took stock of my surroundings. The antechamber was small and nondescript, the walls bare of any carvings or ornamentation. The only feature of note was a narrow doorway on the far wall, leading to a darkened room beyond. I wasn't thrilled about the idea of heading into another shadowy space, not after the nightmares I'd just left behind. But it wasn't like I had much choice. I mentally reviewed the information Alvarez had provided to us. I'd been through 4 of the 6 houses since entering the cave system. Given what I'd been through already, I wasn't looking forward to any of them. The fact that my magic wouldn't work while inside their confines didn't help either. I knew that I'd been lucky so far. My hope was that I would continue to be lucky until I had recovered the last piece of the Gladius. Only one way to tell.